Hello and welcome to the Africa Today podcast from the BBC at 15:30 GMT on Tuesday, April 6th. I am Peter Okwoche. In the pod today, two people charged with the murder of South African white extremist leader Eugene Terreblanche. Ahead of Sudan's general elections, the leader of the SPLM, Salva Kiir, denies doing a deal with President Omar al-Bashir.
The decision was taken unanimously by the political bureau of the SPLM. In isolation of the National Congress Party, there was no any contact between the National Congress Party and the SPLM. Not at all. We did not have any secret agreement.
And the British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, has announced general elections for May the 6th. Should Africa care? In South Africa, two people have been charged with the weekend murder of the white extremist leader, Eugene Terreblanche. A man aged 21 and a 15-year-old boy appeared in a court in the small town of Ventersdorp, west of Johannesburg. There were angry scenes involving both blacks and whites outside the court, and police had to use barbed wire to separate the two groups. Our correspondent Nomsa Maseko was there.
Apartheid South Africa came alive today outside the Ventersdorp Magistrates Court. Armed AWB members dressed in military style carried old South African flags and started shouting racist slurs. This was done in a bid to disperse black community members who gathered here to show solidarity to the two people accused of killing Eugene Terreblanche. The racial battle lines were then officially drawn. AWB members started singing Apartheid South Africa's national anthem, Die Stem, while black people responded by singing the post-1994 anthem, which was meant to symbolize a rainbow nation. But that soon caused several clashes. Chaos, screams and perplexity exploded after an AWB female member splashed water on one of the black protesters. And police had their hands full trying to separate the two groups after jostling and pushing broke out. Authorities eventually succeeded by putting barbed wire and forming a human barricade of about 100 police officers between the black and white groups. This farmer has vowed to take up arms. He claims black people have declared war.
But the time is there for people to say we had to get reckless now. We start to get unlawful. The law is not protecting us. So why obeying the law? We had to disobey the law.
Are you going to start using your gun, sir?
If I had to protect my family, won't you do that?
While this woman praised the two murder suspects.
There is no miracle here. We are here to support those young kids. They are young kids and they have done this for a reason. This thing is hurting. He has killed many people and he was willing to kill these two young boys. If God didn't give himself a power, he could have killed them. I'm not justifying murder, but I'm saying when you are killing with a knife, you will have to be killed with a knife.
Yes! Journalists and members of the public were not allowed inside the courtroom as the two murder accused were formally charged because one of them is a minor. The teenager will be kept at a place of safety, while his co-accused will be sent to jail until their next appearance.
The BBC's Nomsa Maseko reporting from South Africa. Sudan's historic parliamentary and presidential elections begin this Sunday. In the presidential race, the candidate of the main southern party, the SPLM, Yassim Arman, pulled out of the race last week, raising questions about the legitimacy of the whole process. Some analysts have hinted that this could have been because of a behind-the-scenes deal between the SPLM and President Omar al-Bashir, which allowed for Mr. Bashir to secure the presidency in return for a guarantee that the proposed referendum on the independence of the South goes ahead without difficulties. So why did the SPLM pull out? Udwa Kamiwo put that question to the head of the SPLM, Salva Kiir Meredith.
We withdrew Yasser from presidential race because of the reasons that we have stated. And these reasons are facts, and people should really accept what we have stated.
But you did not trust that there could be free and fair elections in Darfur and because of the security law?
Well, Darfur, there is no question about any security. People are fighting in Darfur up to this moment. And so there is a state of emergency. You cannot really have free movement, you cannot have anything to do with elections. What the people in Darfur want is peace in Darfur, not the elections. We should have brought peace to them first, then we go for elections. As for rigging of the elections, it is something obvious that has already been done, and this is why we withdrew our person.
So you withdrawn, Yasser Arman, but are your people, the SPLM, still contesting for national positions, say the National Assembly in the north?
Well, we said that the other levels continue to contest, except in Darfur and Yasser.
But there are those who believe that all of this is part of a strategy for you to... you've done a deal with the North, with President Bashir and his NCP party, which is that you don't contest the election in the North. You don't challenge his presidential run. And in exchange, he does not put any obstacles in the road to the referendum.
Not at all. We did not have any deal. We did not have any agreement with the National Congress Party. The decision was taken unanimously by the political bureau of the SPLM. In isolation of the National Congress Party, there was no any contact between the National Congress Party and the SPLM. Not at all. We did not have any secret agreement.
So what are your strengths then, if you were to answer your critics who say that you are not at all like Dr. John Garang?
Well, in what field are they saying that I'm not just like John Garang?
You like his charisma, his personality, his strength?
In any field, people are not the same. You can be the same in one, you cannot be the same in another.
So what are your own strengths? Why should the people of South Sudan vote for you to be their president?
Well, they know me. I grew up in among them, and I have been in the struggle with them together. They know what I have done. They know what I was doing. They know what I'm doing now. What I have done after June and all these things. I think everybody has a record.
Leader of the SPLM, Salva Kiir Mayardit. The British general election campaign is officially underway, and today the Prime Minister Gordon Brown set the date for May 6th. So after 13 years of a Labour government, should Africa care about the eventual winners of this year's poll? Laura Chappell is a senior research fellow at the Institute for Public Policy Research, a London-based think tank. Bilkisu Labaran first asked her for the details of the two main parties, Labour and the Conservatives.
I don't think any of the parties yet have set out a big foreign policy vision that we can break down, but they've made clear their policies in a number of areas, which sort of implies a lot in terms of what the UK's foreign policy would be under each of these future governments. So, for example, policies on migration. Both parties have quite well worked through policies on migration.
Are they looking to limit numbers, and especially obviously for from Africa?
For the Labour Party, they're planning to continue with the current system that they've put in over the past few years, called the points-based system. And the basic premise of that system is flexibility. So the idea is that should the UK's economy need more workers with a particular skill, we can allow those people in who have those skills to fill those gaps. That's been the sort of framework that they've been working under. The Conservatives have proposed a policy which is much more about limits. So they've said that they will place an annual cap on the number of migrants who can come into the country each year. Now, of course, they can't cap migrants from within the EU. That would be against EU rules. So it applies to countries outside the EU.
And that would obviously have an impact on people who can come in from outside the EU if there's no cap from people
exactly.
coming in from within
so
the EU.
So if the whole quota was filled by people moving from other countries of the EU to the UK, that would severely limit the ability of people from countries in Africa, for example, to move to Britain.
Now, obviously, one major area that people in developing countries and in Africa in particular would be interested in is to see what policies these major parties have in terms of development issues and in terms of aid. What are the parties saying about what they might or might not do when it comes to the kind of aid that they offer to Africa?
I mean, the good aspect of this is that each of the parties have made quite a strong commitment to development and to aid, but they do have different ways of thinking about what aid should be spent on and how it should be spent. One good thing potentially for African countries is that the Conservatives have made a commitment to focus aid on the very poorest nations. So, for example, they're very keen to cut aid completely to China. Under Labour, we've had an aid programme to China. The Conservatives say that shouldn't be a priority. and that the focus should be on other countries. So that may be a positive policy for some African countries. And then there's also a question about how aid is delivered. So at the moment, the Labour government have delivered a lot through Europe. They're working with European partners, whereas the Conservatives are talking about using the Commonwealth. So there's some positives and negatives in that, clearly. I mean, on the one hand, it could be good because it gives countries of the Commonwealth more prominence. But on the other hand, there may be some scepticism about why they're interested in the Commonwealth, whether that's really a progressive partnership model or not.
Laura Chappell, a senior research fellow at the Institute for Public Policy Research, a London-based think tank. As part of our series on African entrepreneurs, let's meet one man who's turned a modest investment into one of Zambia's most successful building supply companies. Kemi Chande is apparently the country's only indigenous Zambian owning a major iron roofing sheets company. Yet when the 43-year-old started his business in 1998, banks wouldn't give him the time of day till he was given the green light by Zambia's Citizens Economic Empowerment Commission. In Kabwe, he told Mutuna Chanda exactly how he made his dream a reality.
I started my business, I think it was around 1998. I was just a mere supplier of building materials. That's how I got the interest of, I looked at roofing sheets. I thought that was the quickest way I could make my money. Looking at that, there was no other Zambians who was doing the same type of business. So I wanted to start manufacturing myself. So I approached the bank, but the banks, they couldn't invest in me because they thought it was risky. Then, lucky enough, the government came on board through the Citizen Economic Empowerment Commission. When they looked at my proposal, they were interested and they were very happy with that. That's how my proposal was approved.
When you were starting your business, what did you start with and how much did you start with?
If I recall very well, my capital was just about $100, which is, at that time was just about 300,000 kwacha. That was the first capital I had, and I went to Zimbabwe with that money.
What were you buying?
We were buying the same building materials, things like steel, to supply to the building industry.
Now, what really motivated you to think of establishing a roofing sheets manufacturing company?
What really motivated me was the fact that there was no Zambian who was doing that kind of a thing. And I knew that the government was going to support me being the only Zambian to start up such kind of a thing.
Of course, in Kawe, we don't have any manufacturer of roofing sheets, so to speak. So was that the key reason why?
Yes, I thought I should take advantage of that because Kawe is centrally located. And I knew that if I was to put up such a plant in Kabwe, a manufacturing plant of that kind, I would cut off all of the northern region of the country. People coming from the Copper Belt, they won't need to go to Lusaka to go and buy roofing sheets. They'll be buying them from Kabwe.
And when you started out in business, did you have any employees?
When I started, I think I just had an assistant, a shop assistant. But today I can command a workforce of about 32 full-time employees.
What is your advice to young people who wish to venture into business or those who are starting out in business?
I'm just a simple person from the street, and most of the people in Kabwe, they know me. They know my background. What I can advise is, as long as you are determined to do something, definitely you do it. There's nothing that can stop you as long as you are determined to do that.
So what has been the secret behind successful management of a business?
Always, you should have a backup. Like if it fails, you have definitely to have something else to fall on. Whenever I would supply building materials to, say, like the ministries, the government ministries, always roofing sheets were always appearing. Whenever you are building, roofing sheets will always be there. So I thought, if I could go in this kind of industry, definitely the market would be huge for me. And for sure the market is huge. I've been given an order worth about 364 million to supply the whole central province to supply the roofing sheets.
That is for the construction of schools?
Construction of basic schools around the province. The vision I have for this company is to one day start even exporting to neighboring countries. That is, of course, after fulfilling the local demand.
Zambian roofing magnate Kemi Chande. And that's it for today. Thank you for downloading the Africa Today podcast from the BBC, recorded weekdays at 15:30 GMT. You can also listen to our programs and access more multimedia content on our website at bbcworldservice.com/Africa. I am Peter Okwoche, and until next time, goodbye.